rubbed his beard in frustration.
"Ah, this is my fault. I should have considered that trees could be called different names in Crichton than they are here."
"So you mixed the wrong potion?" Ariana asked.
"It would seem so,"
the wizard admitted. "What potion did you mix?"
"I don't know. It was a mistake."
The wizard bit his lip in disgust.
"But I'll be sure never to do that again."
As the mist cleared, Ariana became aware of where the worst of the smell was now coming from.
Lord Salva? Corin? I think your clothes are..."
She wrinkled her nose.
"Rather fragrant."
Corin lifted his arm to his nose and sniffed his shirt sleeve.
"Oh, blast! That smell is in my clothes! And my hair now!"
Ariana backed away, making sure to be upwind from the stinky pair.
"Perhaps you two had better bathe. Maybe in the stables?"
"Or a pigsty,"
one of her guards muttered under his breath. Corin shivered as he scrubbed sand into his hair, then lathered his hair for the fourth time with a rough bar of soap. Taking a couple of deep breaths to steel his nerves, he plunged his head under the surface of the pond again and again until he was gasping for breath. Sniffing, he still caught a whiff of that terrible smell. Or he imagined it. Or the smell now was in the pond water. Or in the tissues of his nose. Either way, he couldn't get himself any more clean without scraping his skin off, which he'd almost done. The stablemaster hadn't let him in, or even near the stables, when many of the horses panicked after getting a nose full of Corin.
Pedros had been brought to the servants' bath in the castle, there to be attended by several servants, who doubtless wished they'd volunteered to shovel out the stables that day, but Corin had been left to scoot out a rarely used castle gate and bathe himself in a cold pond that lay half a mile from the imposing stone walls of the castle.
Fish had swum away in a hurry when Corin plunged into the pond, and not only because he disturbed them, he was polluting the water with a horrible stench. Standing up, wearing only short underpants, he looked in dismay at his clothes. There was no way he could ever get that smell out of the wool and cotton fabric of his clothes. Best to dig a hole, then, and bury them. Would the cost of the clothes be taken from his pay? So far, all his clothes and his meals, and everything he'd needed in the castle, had been free. When Pedros sent him out to get something from the city, the wizard gave him coins, and never bothered to count the coins that were returned to the brass money chest in the wizard's office. A chest full of coins that was not even locked. Corin scratched his now itchy scalp, and put on the clean, rough work clothes he'd brought with him. The wizard was a good master to Corin. He could not ask for better. Around Krebs Ford, there had been stories of sons or daughters who had been sent away to serve an apprenticeship, to learn a trade and secure their futures. Stories of masters who abused their young charges, blamed them for everything that went wrong, demanded more money from their parents, and failed to provide any training. Corin knew of two boys who had run away from their abusive masters, run away and come home shamefully, for their parents had spent much hard-earned coins to get the apprenticeships, and now the sons returned with no money and no trade learned. Or worse, for everyone had heard the tale of Annabel Clintock, who had been excited to go away to be a house servant for the family of a knight. Everyone in the village had been excited for her, too, until she returned one day, clothes dirty, shoes missing, having walked most of the way home. The mistress of the house had beaten her for the slightest reason. The girls in the family were also cruel to her, and when the knight was at home, he had taken to sneaking up on Annabel and kissing her roughly, which the mistress of the house blamed on Annabel. When the man tried to open the door to the tiny attic closet where she slept one dark night, she had escaped out the window, climbed down a rosebush, and made her way home to Krebsford over the next week. Almost every family in the poor village had contributed something to the poor girl's family. Corin's family had donated a piglet, but her dreams of becoming a royal maid had been dashed. Corin was willing to take abuse, up to a point. As a commoner, it was simply part of life, that his betters would lord themselves over him. To a point, and no more. So, if Pedrus insisted that Corin pay for the ruined clothes, he would do that. But he wasn't taking all the blame for stinking up half the castle.
"You wished to see me, Lady Traheim,"
Pedrus said as he swept into Carlana's royal office chamber, cutting off the frustrated guard's attempt to announce the wizard. Technically, Carlana had summoned her court wizard, but Pedrus had taken his time arriving at the palace. No one summoned Lord Pedrus Donselva de la Murta, and he certainly didn't respond to a summons from a timid regent. But if Carlana noticed the wizard's lateness, she didn't mention it. "Oh, yes, Pedrus," she said, looking up from a pile of scrolls scattered across her desk. "Come in, come in." She dismissed the guard with a gesture and walked over by the window where they could speak without being overheard. Also, there was a breeze coming into the room. Pedrus and Corin had been scrubbed until their skin was pink in the stables 2 days before and declared that the smell was gone, but Carlana wasn't taking any chances. "I have news of Corin's parents." Pedrus's eyebrows shot up.
"Indeed?"
"Yes," the regent said with a frown. "His father only had one sibling, a brother, Corin's uncle." She checked the scroll for a name. "What is it? Oh, and Bladewell, and he was no help. Corin's mother's family are traveling traders. One of my search parties located their caravan in Holdenaire's, where they're staying over the winter."
"Search parties?" Pedrus asked in surprise. "I didn't know."
Ariana insisted. "And we do owe the boy, after all. With the caravan are a couple of his mother's relatives. They knew where to find his mother's cousin, where his parents told Corin they were going. The cousin lives, or lived, in Sautagne."
"Lived?"
"The search party reports that he died 4 months before Corin left, Crab Ford or something, his village. His mother wouldn't have known."
"I take it that the search party didn't find Corin's parents in Sautagne."
Carlana shook her head. "No, and no one remembers his mother being there. I think his parents lied about where they were going before they...
Carlana's hands gripped the rolled-up scroll, twisting it in anger. "Dumped him on the side of the road. What kind of people would abandon their own children? If we ever do find them, I'd be tempted to hang the miserable wretches."
Pedrus took the scroll from the regent and laid it on the table.
"Carlana, they believed their son was cursed, a jinx. Based on what Corin tells me happened around him in that village, I don't blame people for thinking he was a jinx. The fact is, he was dangerous. In the last incident, he destroyed the village's only grain mill. By accident, of course. The people of his village are poor farmers. They live year by year on their crops, and if they can't grind their grain, they have nothing much else to sell. His parents, well, they must have figured there was nothing they could do about a jinx." "Corin! Corin!"
Pedrus called out from his laboratory.
"Where is that boy?"
"Here, sir," Corin gasped, having dashed up 2 flights of stairs when he heard the wizard calling. "I was copying your book of healing potions, as you asked, sir."
"Oh, yes,"
Pedro said, absent-mindedly, having forgotten what he'd instructed Corin to do earlier.
Having any trouble with it?
No, sir. There are some foreign words, but I'm copying the letters on those.
Not foreign. Those are old Lengish. The language you hear in Tarador referred to as the common speech is called Lengish everywhere else, and those words are from Lengish a long time ago. Words that are not used any more.
Pedras thought the term common speech showed how people in Tarador arrogantly considered their land to be the center of the world, which was not true. Although, in terms of the long struggle between light and darkness, between the underworld and the world of the real, Tarador truly was the center. And that was why Pedras had left his homeland.
Oh, I didn't know, sir.
No matter. I need you to go to the rooftop garden and see if there is any basil left.
Pedras had put the delicate plants inside glass boxes as the weather grew colder, to extend their growing season.
Basil, sir?
Corin couldn't remember basil being used in any of the potions he'd read, but then there were many, many potion books he hadn't touched yet in the tower's library.
For a potion?
No, Pedras said with a wink. For my dinner. The royal kitchens are preparing noodles with tomato sauce and meatballs, and the cooks here never use enough basil.
Oh, Corin laughed. Yes, sir. I think the basil has not gone by yet.
Corin had never had tomato sauce or noodles before he came to Linden. Now that dish was one of his favorites. Food in Winterthur province tended toward potatoes and gravy, which was filling, but rather bland after a while. Thinking about climbing the stairs all the way to the tower's roof reminded Corin of something that had been bothering him.
Sir, I've been meaning to ask you a question.
About the stairs to the rooftop.
I was wondering when you would ask me about that,
Pedras said with a twinkle in his eye.
I figured something was different about it the second day I was here, sir.
There was one set of stairs from the bottom of the tower to the fourth floor. Then the stairs split, with one going only to the two top floors and the roof.
There aren't enough stairs, sir. I mean, I went outside and counted, and the windows aren't spaced evenly. But there aren't enough stairs to go from the fourth floor all the way up to the roof.
Most people take a long time to notice, if they ever do. Come with me.
Pedras led the way down one set of stairs to the fourth floor, where the other stairs were on the other side of the tower, behind a door. The wizard opened the heavy door and walked ahead of Corin into the stairway, lit only by one narrow window that lay partway around the curve of the tower.
Soon, too soon, they arrived at the landing on the eighth floor of the tower.
Corin had been carefully counting steps.
Tell me, what did you notice?
The wizard asked intently.
The stairs are only enough to go up one floor, maybe a bit more, and the stairway curves too tightly into the tower, sir. We should be in the center of the fifth floor, but we're not. We're still up against the outside of the tower wall.
Anything else?
Pedras said hopefully, with a raised eyebrow. There weren't enough stairs. The passageway curved too tightly. What else could the wizard be hinting at? Corin mentally walked back through the lower doorway, up the stairs, past the window.
The window! Sir, the window should face west, with the afternoon light shining directly in, but it's not.
The window was too high up the wall for Corin to see out and tell from the view which way the window was facing.
Very good!
The wizard said delightedly as he clapped his hands.
Very good indeed. You are correct. There are not enough stairs to climb four floors, and the window faces north, even though it should face west. The answer, Corin, is magic.
true magic.
Pedrus gestured Corin over to the upper doorway.
You see how the stone around this doorway is thicker than the tower walls?
Corin peered at the dark stone. The doorway was thicker than his arm was long. He reached out gingerly and touched the stone. His fingertips tingled sharply, and he jerked his arm back.
Ha! Pedrus chuckled. Watch yourself there. This doorway and the one below are portals. Between them, the fabric of our world has been... The best way to explain it is... stretched. That is how one flight of stairs can climb four floors in this tower. The truth is, there are no stairs, not in the real world, and there is no window. One thing you didn't notice is that footsteps don't echo in there. The sound is muffled because there is no real stone in there.
Corin peered warily down the stairway that didn't really exist, according to the wizard. How did they build the tower that way? He asked, completely astonished.
The tower wasn't built like this. I added the staircase when I got here,
the wizard said with obvious pride in his voice.
This tall tower may look impressive, but living here with all these stairs is painful to my old knees. I had the original stairway blocked up at the top and bottom. It's still there, behind the stones. The workers installed these thick doorways, and I created the pathway between them. My original idea was to simply step directly from one doorway into another.
You can do that?
Corin's head was spinning.
Yes, but then I thought that would be disturbing to any guests who are not wizards. Also, it takes more energy to go directly from one portal into another, and I was showing off already.
What do you mean, sir?
Pedrus, the powerful wizard who could whisk people from one floor of the tower to another, looked sheepish.
I created the shortcut soon after I arrived here. All those stairs wore me out. I couldn't see myself using anything above the fifth floor, but with all the books, scrolls, and equipment for my laboratory, there wasn't much room for me to have any living space. The portal was a way to make the upper floors practical, but in truth, I was showing off. I'd just arrived. I was a foreigner, and I was feeling rather full of myself. It was a way for me to impress the wizards of Terrador, because none of them could create such a portal.
Pedrus couldn't help mentioning the last part with justifiable pride.
It was a lot more work than I intended, but once I started, I had to finish it.
Corin looked at his fingers, which were still tingling.
Sir, this is... it's... amazing!
Is it dangerous? What if you're in there, and the magic, stops working?
The wizard was uncomfortable with the question. It was a good question. He didn't know the answer. Not for certain. It had taken enormous energy to create the portals, over many months, and he had to renew the spell from time to time. Years ago, when he'd grown weary of renewing the spell, he'd considered letting the portals decay and using only the bottom four or five floors of the tower. But his pride wouldn't let that happen. Really, he thought the whole tall, narrow tower to be a silly place to live. It was intimidating to most people, and living there did add to his mystique as a wizard, and the tower was built for the first wizard of Terrador, so Pedrus didn't have a choice in the matter.
Well, it doesn't simply stop working. It fades after a while. A long while, mind you, not overnight. You would notice the stairway getting dim, and...
Pedrus struggled to recall what a fading portal was like, as he'd been mostly very regular about renewing the spell.
It gets to be like walking through a thick fog, or walking through sort of water, I would say. and it takes longer to go from one end to another. You would notice that. But it wouldn't simply stop with someone inside, unless a person deliberately decided to live in there for a long time for some reason. No, what would happen is that you would no longer be able to walk through the doorways.
While he was speaking, the wizard was wondering what would happen if, say, an enemy wizard destroyed the portals while someone was between them. Where would the person go? Likely the person would pop back into the real world inside a wall, somewhere between the fourth and eighth floors. Releasing that much energy would destroy the tower.
But no matter. Any wizard with the power to destroy the portals could use that energy much more effectively by doing something else, something even more destructive.
Still, it was a good question about what happened when a portal collapsed.
Phaedrus didn't know anything in all the literature of wizardry to answer that question. He'd started constructing an experiment in his mind. He loved experiments.
Perhaps he could create very small portals and send a bug, such as a beetle, and then collapse the portals. Of course, such a potentially destructive experiment could not be conducted in his tower. He would need to be somewhere out in the countryside.
Huh? What?
Phaedrus suddenly realized Corin had been talking to him.
The basil, sir. I'll go get it now.
Yes. I'll be in my study. I have an idea for an experiment that I want to write down before I forget my thoughts.
Corin walked quickly up the stairs, the regular, normal, real stone stairs, up to the roof, and opened the glass case to collect basil. If Phaedrus was thinking up an experiment, Corin wanted to be far away. He wrapped a small handful of the fragrant herbs in a clean cloth, then sat for a moment, looking out to the west, over the rooftops of Linden. The top of the wizard's tower was the highest point for many miles, and the view was thrilling.
That day, Corin wasn't thinking of the view. He was thinking about how he lived with an enormously powerful wizard, a man even more powerful than Corin had imagined.
Phaedrus could stretch the fabric of the world.
Corin didn't even know what that meant, exactly. But one thing it meant was that he needed to remind himself, despite how nice and jovial and absent-minded Phaedrus was, that the man was the court wizard of Tarador, and Corin was a barely educated, homeless farm boy who had lucked into a place to live. Corin knew he had, since Phaedrus returned with the army, become overly familiar with the wizard, and not being properly respectful or fearful of the man's incredible power and station in life. If Corin hadn't saved the Crown Princess, it was likely he would never be able to look the wizard in the eye, in the extremely unlikely event they ever met. Corin went back down the stairs to the upper doorway, which he knew to be a portal to another world. He peered into the stairway that didn't exist, but as there didn't appear to be any fog, he took a deep breath and ran through the non-existent stairway as fast as he could, stopping only when he crashed into the reassuringly real stone hallway at the bottom. He looked fearfully back up through the lower portal, grateful that the wizard didn't send him up to the upper floors often.
Corin knew he was supposed to be quiet and keep still, and not be noticed. He couldn't help craning his neck to gawk around the throne chamber. It was filled with nobles and their servants. Of all the servants, he was the only one standing next to the Crown Princess, on the floor below the steps that led to the throne where Kalana sat, with Phaedrus standing by her side. Ariana leaned toward Corin, close enough that he could inhale her perfume. Seeing her in her formal gown reminded him that she was royalty, and he nothing but a common servant, and he felt a bit ashamed.
"I wish I was wearing your robes, Corin. The collar of this dress is scratching my neck," she whispered. I don't think a crown princess is supposed to be wearing servants' robes.
Corin whispered back. Besides, that dress wouldn't fit me.
Arianna giggled at the thought of Corin wearing her frilly dress, and that brought a nasty look from her mother.
Arianna bit her lip to stop laughing.
I hate this ceremony stuff. So boring.
The ceremony was to welcome a new ambassador from the Indus Empire, a powerful land far to the southeast. The tall door at the end of the chamber swung open, and the chief of protocol, Charl Fusting, thumped his staff on the stone floor. In a loud and squeaky voice, he announced,
"Your Highness, Lord Salvar, assembled guests, please welcome the representative from His Most Gracious Majesty, the Raj of Indus."
It was like a small parade. First, two tall warriors, wearing brightly polished armor, carrying poles with banners with the symbol of Indus, a golden tiger. Next, four girls, adorned with many layers of silk gowns that trailed on the floor behind them. The girls had small bells on their fingers, and danced and jingled the bells as they came into the chamber. The girls were followed by eight warriors, who carried large curved ceremonial swords, stomping their feet in rhythm on the stone floor. When the warriors stopped and backed away from each other, two tall women came through the doorway, put trumpets to their lips, and blew a loud salute. Finally, the ambassador arrived, walking slowly, his head held high. He wore a costume covered in gold braid, and a tall hat with tassels. When he reached the bottom of the steps up to where Kalana sat, he bowed and presented a sealed scroll to a guard, who carried it up the steps to the regent. Kalana broke the seal, opened the scroll, read it carefully, and handed it to Pedras, who also read it, then nodded.
"I am Kalana Trehaim, regent of Tarador, and this is Lord Pedras Donsalva, master wizard. Your credentials from His Majesty the Raj appear to be in order. We recognize you as the official ambassador from the Indus Empire."
The ambassador bowed twice, to the regent and to the wizard. It might have been Arianna's imagination, but it seemed that he bowed more deeply to the wizard.
"I am Usse Uligrapat, the Bey of Begal, and I have the honor of being the representative of His Most Gracious Majesty the Raj."
Corin leaned over to whisper to Arianna.
"What did he say his name is?"
"I think he said Oopsie Underpants," she whispered back with a wink.
Corin couldn't help snickering, and the maids who were standing behind Arianna burst into laughter.
"Oopsie Underpants,"
one of the maids repeated, loud enough to be heard by the ambassador. Arianna tried to shush them into silence, but it was too late. The ambassador looked up at them, his face red. His warriors, angry at the insult to their ambassador, moved to surround him. Kalana was staring daggers at her daughter.
"Uh-oh."
Corin saw the wizard looking at him and tried to put on his best innocent face. He knew Arianna was in big trouble. Before the ceremony, Kalana had told her daughter how important it was for Tarador to have friendly relations and support from the powerful Raj of Indus. Kalana rose from her throne.
"Ambassador, please excuse my daughter, the Crown Princess. She is still a very silly young girl sometimes."
The ambassador was not satisfied by the regent's apology.
"What was the Crown Princess laughing at?"
Arianna knew she had to do something or risk insulting the Raj. With Tarador at war, she could not afford to lose such an important ally. She stepped forward, and the crowd parted as she walked toward the ambassador.
"Bey of Begal, I apologize to you, and to His Majesty the Raj. My servants were laughing because I could not pronounce your name correctly."
"My name?"
"Usse Uligrapat,"
Arianna said very slowly. "Is that correct?"
"Yes. What is funny about my name? It is honored in my land.
And, well, it should be. It was Tripan Uligrapat who led the army of Indus to victory against the Kulan Horde. Are you related to him?
The ambassador nodded.
Tripan was my ancestor?
Kalana bowed. I am honored to speak to his descendant. If the Kulan Horde had not been stopped, they would have overrun Tarador, for we were at war with Isidore then, as we are now.
Ariana put her arm through the ambassador's arm and steered him toward the dining room, where a feast awaited.
Tell me, please, when the Horde came through the mountain passes, how did your ancestor get the idea to trap them by flooding the river valley?
You have read your history, young lady. Are you familiar with?
The ambassador accepted Ariana's apology, and the dinner feast was very successful. Ariana smiled and laughed at the ambassador's jokes, and Kalana's army commanders talked about the great long-ago battle between Indus and the Kulan Horde. That was a subject about which the ambassador could speak for hour on end. After the dinner, a tired Ariana walked up to her chambers to collapse into bed. Kalana was awaiting for her. Ariana hung her head.
I'm sorry, Mommy. I was stupid and childish.
Kalana swept her daughter into her arms and kissed the top of her head.
No, you were wonderful. Yes, you shouldn't have laughed at him. What was so funny, anyway?
Corin asked me the bay's name, and I called him Oopsie Underpants.
Oopsie!
Kalana burst into laughter.
That is funny. I would have laughed, too.
You're not mad at me?
I was. Don't do that again. We need our allies.
Ariana, when you are the queen, you are going to make many mistakes. What you showed me tonight is that you can take responsibility and fix your mistakes by yourself.
Kalana stepped back and looked at her daughter.
If you can stop being a silly girl, I think you might become a very good queen someday.
Yes, mother.
On the day when the first significant snow of the season fell on the castle, the wizards arrived. When he discovered Corin's power, Pedrus had sent word far and wide to other wizards, asking them for advice and help. One wizard Pedrus had not invited was Dragotil, for that man had earned the displeasure of Lord Salva by failing to discover Corin's magical power, and thus Dragotil was on his way to a new assignment in a land far to the south of Tarador. The first wizard to enter the castle was a woman, slender, with dark hair and green eyes. She might have been young or old, Corin couldn't tell. There was something very mysterious about her. Pedrus whispered to Corin that her name was Chu Wing, and she was from Qingdo, a very large empire far to the east. She had been visiting a wizard in the east of Tarador when the message from Pedrus reached her, or she could not have arrived so soon. The wizard she rode in with was a man Corin would never have guessed was a wizard. He was of average height, with a round belly, curly red hair, and red freckles across his face. He looked like an innkeeper, not a wizard. Shomus Feeney was his name, and he greeted Pedrus with a ferocious hug that knocked Pedrus's breath away. Pedrus instructed Corin to show the wizards to their rooms, which Corin had prepared a week before. Shomus quickly dropped his bundle on the bed and set off for the royal kitchens. The woman let Corin carry her saddlebags for her, and he set them down carefully on the floor of her room.
Madam Wing, Corin began.
Madam Chu, she corrected him. In Qingdo, our family name comes first.
Oh,
Corin blushed with embarrassment.
Madam Chu, is there anything I can get for you?
No, I will dine later, with Lord Salva.
Come here, boy. Let me look at you.
Corin inched carefully forward, still wary of wizards. She held his chin in her hand,
looking into his eyes and turning his head back and forth. Then she pressed her palm to Corin's forehead and closed her eyes. He felt suddenly very warm.
"Hiya!"
Madame Chu exclaimed, and she released Corin, her eyes open wide, and she gasped to catch her breath, clutching her hands to her chest. "Are you all right, Madame Chu?"
I am fine, Corin. Foolish, but fine. Leave me, please. We will speak later."
She looked troubled, and her face was pale.
"Did I do something wrong?"
Corin asked as he paused in the doorway.
"No. I was, you could say, I was testing Lord Salva."
The last of the three wizards arrived well after midnight and raised a fuss because the castle gate was closed. Pedras roused Corin out of bed to fetch the man from the gate, stable his horse, carry up his bags, and bring whatever hot food was available from the royal kitchens. This man was tall and thin, with very dark brown skin, and he was not friendly at all. Corin didn't blame the man for being grumpy, having travelled far and then kept waiting in the cold. Something about him reminded Corin of a bird, one of those tall, thin birds that stands at the water's edge, peering down into the water, waiting for fish. He too insisted on examining Corin, but only grunted, and remarked that Lord Salva had better know what he was talking about to make a man ride many leagues in the cold weather. It was well after 2 in the morning before Corin collapsed into bed. Over the next week, as the snow fell and then melted, the four wizards met behind closed doors in the laboratory chamber on the 5th floor of the tower. Long into the night the wizards talked and cast spells, and strange lights coming through the windows had people all over the castle talking. What was going on in there? People asked Corin. Even Ariana asked him. But other than bringing food and herbs and plants needed for potions and cleaning up, Corin really didn't know what was going on. Of course, what Corin told people was that he couldn't say. But he hinted that, of course, he knew. He just wasn't allowed to say. It was all secret wizard things, dangerous for other people to know about. To Ariana, he told only the truth. He didn't know, but he was scared being around so many wizards and not sleeping well. On the 9th day after the wizards arrived, it was relatively warm and sunny, and Pedras called for a break. Pedras, Madame Chu, and the late-arriving wizard who called himself Lord Mawazo rode out of the castle gate to examine a ruined ancient city that lay across the river to the east. Shomus, who insisted Corin call him Shomus instead of Lord Feeny, actually helped straighten up the tower a bit, then rode out with Corin to collect roots in the forest.
"That's a fine horse,"
Shomus said admiringly. His own horse looked like it should be pulling a heavy plough across a field instead of carrying a wizard.
"Is that the devil horse you tamed?"
"No, sir," Corin replied, patting Thunderbolt on the neck. "He was never a devil, and I didn't tame him. He allows me to ride him."
"Ah, yes, I understand. Very good,"
Shomus said with a wink.
"How would you like living with a wizard, Corin?"
"Truly, sir, it's kind of frightening.
I know you wizards mean well and all, but you're so powerful, and I'm afraid Pedras will turn me into a frog by accident."
"Ha!" Shomus laughed. "Not all wizards are powerful, young Corin. Pedras is stronger than the three of us combined, by far, and Madame Chu is much stronger than either Mawazo or me. Of course, there are different kinds of strengths in magic. I am probably the best healer of us four, and I'm good with plants and animals. Anything to do with nature. But I'm not so good at throwing fireballs."
Shomus held his palm up, and only a feeble, flickering glow hovered above his hand.
"Mawazo can't even do that."
"Oh, don't tell him I told you that."
"I won't, sir," Corin said, surprised. It had never occurred to him that there were different types of wizards,
and that not all of them could throw fireballs.
Owazo has his own kind of strength. He is our expert on potions, and the arcane arts. There probably isn't a scroll about wizardry that old Mawazo hasn't read, and he has looked deeper into the enemy's dark heart than anyone else dares.
Shomas shivered at that thought, and waved his index finger in a circle, as if to ward off unseen evil.
That takes a special kind of strength that I do not have.
And Madam Chu?
Madam Chu.
Shomas drew the name out. She is a mysterious one, isn't she?
One of the court wizards of the Emperor of Qingdao, she is. And we're fortunate she was visiting my homeland when the message from Pedrus arrived.
There are more wizards than you four, sir.
Oh, yes. But there aren't many of us, that's for certain. No, the three of us are the only senior members of the Wizards' Council who could get here before winter snows close the roads. There are other wizards, but not many. Not many. Too few of us compared to the ranks of the enemy.
Shamus's voice trailed off, and he stared at the ground. Suddenly, he brightened, stopped his horse, and dropped to the ground.
Here, look, around this old tree. I think we'll find the roots Mawaza wants. Bring your shovel.
Corin brought a late supper to the four wizards, who were engrossed in reading. The supper was late because the wizards had risen from bed late, eating a late breakfast and then an early lunch, then a second lunch around the hour Shomas Feeney called tea time. There were books and scrolls covering every table, every shelf, and stacked four deep on the floor. Corin had to set the food tray in the hallway, and clean off a table before he could set the plates and bowls out for the wizards. Corin studied the four wizards, who were all lost in thought, their noses buried deep in books or scrolls, absent-mindedly sipping cups of tea. There was Pedrus, with his dark hair and beard, from the land of Shtade in the south. Madam Chu from Qingdao, so far to the east that Corin could scarcely imagine anything so far away. Shomas Feeney, and the red hair and freckles of many people from his northern land. And Lord Mawazo, who had the dark skin and tightly curled black hair of his land, far, far to the south even of Estada. Four wizards from different lands, all together here in Linden, all for a common cause, whatever that was. Corin marvelled that he, a boy from a simple farm in a poor village of an unimportant county of Tarador, could be here, now, with four powerful and mysterious wizards. He was on his way out of the room, treading a narrow path through the scrolls, when Lord Mawazo cleared his throat.
Boy.
Yes, sir.
Corin bowed to the wizard.
Lord Mawazo was a stickler for formality, and quick to take offense when he thought he was not being given proper respect as a powerful master wizard.
Pedrus, Mawazo said, without looking at Corin. It is time. Nowhere do the scrolls tell us what we need to know.
No.
Pedrus shook his head.
It is almost dark, and we dare not act while in the enemy's element. Tomorrow, in the sunshine, we shall find the answers you seek.
That we all seek, Madam Chu added.
Pedrus nodded.
That we all seek, yes.
Mawazo waved his hand dismissively at Corin.
Away with you, boy.
Corin bowed again and backed out the door, burning with curiosity. Lord Mawazo had wanted Corin to stay for something, something Pedrus thought too dangerous to attempt in darkness. What wizardly act would need Corin to be involved? He shuddered. That night, Corin did not sleep well at all. The next day dawned cloudy with a chilly drizzle. The wizard had, for a change, gone to bed early,
and so they were up early and hungry. Corin fetched breakfast, then a mid-morning snack, then lunch. Still, the sun did not shine, and Pedrus counseled patience, for he predicted sunshine in the afternoon. And, to Corin's surprise, while he was clearing away dishes, the rain lifted, the clouds parted, and within an hour there was hardly a cloud in the sky. Pedrus summoned Corin to follow, and the four wizards led the way to the platform on top of the wizard's tower, under the sunny sky. The top of the tower was one of Corin's favorite places to be, for it commanded a great view over the castle, the royal palace, and the city, far out into the countryside. The wizards sat on benches that were built into the stone wall around the top of the tower, and Pedrus told Corin to stand in the center.
"Corin, don't be afraid. We only need to ask you some questions."
"Yes," Shomas added with a friendly smile.
"A few simple questions. Sometimes a wizard needs to work with, well, with a person who doesn't have any magical power," Pedrus suggested.
"Yes, someone without any magical powers. To compare, you understand?" Shomas finished, with a questioning glance at the Master Wizard.
"I understand, Shomas. I mean, Lord Feeny, sir."
"Tell us about your family,"
Madam Chu spoke up abruptly. Since the day she had touched Corin's forehead, she had hardly spoken to him. Corin looked at the floor, his face burning red with shame.
"I'm sorry, ma'am, but I don't have a family."
Chu's stern expression softened, as did her voice.
"Corin, tell us about your parents, your mother and father, and their parents, and brothers and sisters. Everything you can remember. Their names, where they came from. Everything you can remember, the good and the bad. There was good, wasn't there, Corin?"
Corin blinked away a tear. Yes, before he caused his family to be exiled from their village, there had been good times. Much more than bad.
"My mother's family I never met. They were from far away, I think. Her parents were traders. She met my father when the traders stopped in our village to repair their wagon. My mother has relatives. That's where my parents were going when they left..."
Corin was about to say they left me.
Left our village. They never told me where they were going."
"So I could never find them," Corin added to himself. Corin told them everything he could remember, about his uncle Ander and his father's parents, who died when he was very young.
"Your family were farmers and travelling merchants then," Shoma said. "No family stories of, oh, say, wizards or knights, that sort of thing."
"Bladewell. There was a Sir Bladewell, a knight a long time ago. Are you related to him?"
"No, sir. I don't think so. No knights and no wizards. My father's uncle supposedly had a horse who could count to 10, but I think that was just a story."
Why were four wizards interested in his family history?
"Humph." Lord Muazzo looked down his long nose at Corin. "Common peasants, then."
"You are also born a common peasant, Cecil," Madam Chu admonished the proud wizard.
"Cecil?" Corin's eyes grew wide. He'd never heard that Lord Muazzo had a first name.
"Is it true, sir?"
"None of your business, boy," Muazzo snapped. "Lord Salva, we waste time while the sun sinks in the sky."
Pedrus nodded, and Shomas rose to speak with Corin.
"Corin, we're going to do something. It's important, and you won't be hurt, I promise you."
"Am I to be tested, sir?"
Corin asked anxiously.
"No," Pedrus hastened to say. "It is us who will be tested. We need you to serve as a focus."
Pedrus avoided looking Corin in the eye, and his words did not ring true. The hair rose on the back of Corrin's neck. Pedras was lying to him. Again.
Yes, the test will be for those who do not believe their own senses.
Madame Chu looked pointedly at Muazzo, who snorted. Corrin swallowed hard and nodded, and stood still. The four wizards stood around him, joined hands, and began chanting strange foreign words. He began to feel warm, the way he had when Madame Chu touched his forehead. The feeling of warmth started at his toes and swelled as it climbed his body, until the top of his head was uncomfortably warm. He felt faint, and his knees shook. Suddenly the wizard stopped chanting, and the warmth went away. All four of the wizards seemed slightly dazed, and Lord Muazzo fell to his knees, his face ashen.
"Lord Salva, I apologize for doubting you," Muazzo gasped.
Madame Chu knelt at his side, concerned.
"Cecil, do you need help?"
"No, no, Wing. I am fine, thank you."
For the first time, Corrin saw Muazzo smile.
"We have hope!"
Seamus exclaimed, and threw his arms around Corrin in another crushing hug that took the boy's breath away.
"The legends say—"
"The legends are inconclusive, Seamus." Muazzo rose unsteadily to his feet, supported by Madame Chu.
"I have made it my life's work to study the legends."
"Nevertheless, we do have hope," Pedro said. "Hope and opportunity."
"And danger,"
Madame Chu added.
"Yes, danger. Corrin, you may go now. It's a nice day. Why don't you take Thunderbolt out for a ride?"
"Yes, sir." Corrin bowed to the four wizards and hurried down and out of the tower as fast as his shaky legs could carry him. The joyous feeling of the wizards was short-lived.
"What does this mean?" Seamus asked. "Out of nowhere, this immense power falls into our laps and we can't use it. The boy is too young to control such power himself, and if we channeled such power through him, we may kill him."
Muazzo rapped his fist on the stone parapet in frustration.
"It would certainly kill him. Yet, the enemy would not hesitate to channel power through the boy, use him up until he was a dry husk, and throw him away. Pedras, you were wise to hide the boy's power from him."
"Who else knows?"
Muazzo asked.
"Us and the regent."
Chu bit her lip.
"Perhaps it would be best if Lady Carlana forgot what she has heard."
"No."
Pedras cut off Chu's treasonous thought.
"She is the regent. We may have disagreements, but we both serve Tarador. There will be no tampering with her memories. Understood? Besides, Carlana has supported me completely about Corrin."
"I sensed your blocking spell is wearing thin,"
Chu warned. Pedras nodded agreement.
"We need the four of us to cast a spell that will use Corrin's own power to block his ability. It will wear off eventually. His power is too great to contain. He is already much stronger than all of us together."
"We will cast the spell tonight, after the boy is asleep,"
Chu declared.
"The question still needs to be answered. What does it mean that we find this boy now, when the power of Isidore is growing beyond our ability to contain it? Muazzo, you know the scrolls better than anyone."
Muazzo rubbed his chin. "There are many prophecies of the final battle between Tarador and Isidore, or as I should say, between the forces of light and the darkness. This is not a battle for Tarador alone."
Muazzo nodded to Pedras and Chu, who are from lands far away.
"But for all free peoples. I cannot think of any mention of this boy in the scrolls. He is a complete mystery.
But you are correct, Madame Chu. It cannot be only a coincidence that Corrin's power is rising now, when our need is becoming so dire. We must take hope from that.
There is one thing I know for certain, Shoma said, pulling an apple from his pocket and biting into it as his appetite returned. As much wizardly power this boy has, so far in his life it has been balanced by bad luck. Think on that, Moazo. Luck is not a... And you are wrong about something, Lord Salva, Shomus continued. There is such a thing as a jinx.
What?
Chu exclaimed.
Shomus Feeney was not known to be a philosopher.
It seems to me that Corrin's life has been jinxed. By now, he should be well on his way to becoming a powerful wizard, beyond the enemy's power to harm. His family should be wealthy beyond their dreams. Instead, he's sweeping floors and chopping wood, abandoned by his parents. You think it's a coincidence that Corrin happens to be in the wilderness at the exact same time a magic-spelled beast attacks the crown princess of Asador's greatest enemy?
Shomus asked, with a raised eyebrow. It is not coincidence. And Corrin is not a jinx, Lord Muazzo insisted, with surprising vehemence. For us, for the forces of light who struggle against the darkness, he is the opposite of a jinx. For our young princess, he was a savior, unlooked for in the wilderness. When she needed him, he came without being called. For us now, facing what we all believe will be the final battle, he is hope. No, Shomas. He may feel his own life has been jinxed, but he is the greatest stroke of luck we could wish for.
If he remains on our side, if the enemy does not gain control of his power, Shomas warned.
Pedrus let out a great sigh.
Yes, if.
Chapter 7 Corrin stumbled out of bed late, unsure why he had slept so late and still felt so stupidly tired. It felt like he had hardly slept at all, and he had a vague memory of disturbing dreams involving wizards. Wizards gathered around his bed in the dark of the night. He splashed cold water on his face, tried to drag a comb through his tangled hair, and hurried up the stairs. The wizards were not going to be happy about their breakfast being late. To Corrin's immense surprise, the four wizards were already sitting around the table, digging into a breakfast feast, and he could smell hot coffee. The wizard must have brewed the coffee himself that morning. Pedrus waved to him.
Ah, there you are, young Corrin. Had enough sleep, have you? Mr. Woollyhead,
he said with a jovial wink. Come, come, sit down. Shomas fetched enough food for an army. Shomas patted his ample belly while stuffing a buttered muffin in his mouth.
I am hungry enough to eat like an army.
Corrin almost fainted when Lord Muazzo rose to pull out a chair for Corrin and then pour tea for him.
Jam? Muazzo offered. This strawberry jam goes particularly well on the muffins.
His head spinning, Corrin managed to thank the wizards and sat eating muffins and bacon and ham and eggs and bread that Pedrus toasted over a fire in the corner of the room. The wizards talked about places they'd been, mutual friends they'd seen, or not seen in many years. Muazzo was in such a good mood that he poured out the rest of the teapot into his cup and then performed what he called a trick. With a mumbled incantation and waving his hands around, he made the teapot disappear, right before Corrin's very eyes.
Sir, how did you do that? Corrin asked, amazed.
Pedrus never did any tricks with his wizardly skills. Corrin had so far never seen him use any magic, except for healing spells,
It is now in the Shadow Realm, Corin, Moazo said in a dramatic voice.